really makes a great partnership in the sign industry. It's not just pricing or turnaround times. No surprise here, it's trust. Today, we're pulling back the curtain with a signage wholesale president and owner who's built lasting relationships across clients, vendors, and teams, and with us. He's sharing the secrets behind what actually works. Hey everyone, welcome back to the Innovation Room. I'm your host, Tori, here with my co-host, Rhiannon. Today, we're looking forward to speaking with Stuart Stein. He is the third generation president and owner of Esko Manufacturing and Stein Sign Display. Esko is one of our trusted partners at North American Signs. We just love working with them. And Stuart is a really active member of the national and international sign industry scene. He's a member of the board for the International Sign Association, the director of approved product vendors at the World Sign Association, and an active member in his local community. So Stuart, we're really excited to have you on and to pick your brain a little bit. Thanks for being here. Welcome to the show.
Yes, thank you for having me. I appreciate it. Nice to be here.
So we are talking today about building trust with clients, and we really wanted to approach this in three different angles. Obviously, client relationships, we have vendor relationships, and then the internal team. And I know as we talk about these, some of these will intercross and everything, but we really thought it was important to still separate these into three separate topics. So, Stuart, before we dig into the meat of the client relationships, can you just give us a brief overview of the types of clients that you work with?
Sure. So our business is a little unique. Just for a little bit of history and context, in 1952, my grandpa started Stein Sign Display, which is a retail sign company, and we service basically South Dakota. And then 13 years later, he started Esko Manufacturing based off of a product that a machine that he had patented and invented called the roll former. And this roll former was basically a single sheet of steel that made sign cabinets, and that's what eventually launched Esko. So since 1965, we've actually had two businesses under our family ownership, a wholesale company and a retail company. So for Esko, our clients are really fall under three different categories. We'd have mom and pop type shops. We would have national sign companies such as North American Signs, and then also brokers and basically every other sign company of any other size that either doesn't have the skill, the capacity, or just has a need for some sort of unique sign that we're able to produce that perhaps they're not able to.
Thanks for sharing that history with us. That's amazing. It's so nice to see another family-owned company that has that long-standing relationship and partnership. So if you had to pick three, what would you say are the most important factors in building trust between wholesaler and then the signage client?
Sure. So number one, it actually is mirrors up with our core value, and that's integrity. Integrity is one of our core values. When we mapped out our top performers of our company, we said that we needed to have integrity as a core value because it's about doing the right thing, not only for the company, but more importantly, for the customer as well. And that holds true with our client relationships as well. Having an open, honest relationship falls right into that integrity value for our company. Another one for us is around performance. So for our clients in particular, in building up the trust with them, we have to perform. We have to be consistent with our on-time shipping. We have to be consistent with our quality that we provide. And there has to be what I'm going to call deposits into the piggy bank, where we do so many things right so many times in a row, because eventually we're going to screw up. And hopefully we have enough deposits into that little piggy bank to cash in when we fall short of our own expectations and our customers' expectations, and that they can rely on the history that we've developed with them through the years. And then last but not least, in terms of developing the trust with our clients, I would say that it really boils down to the relationship. So we don't necessarily want to quote jobs just to win a sale. We want to quote jobs to win the relationship and the partnership, to not view each sign order as a transaction, but more as a ongoing partnership. And there are companies that are really good fits with Esko from that mentality. But then there are other companies out there that are very much just bottom line, giving the best price, the shortest lead time. I don't really care about anything else. And those aren't necessarily my favorite customers to work with. And we have certainly serviced those types of customers through the years, but we prefer the partnership approach.
And that's so important. I think you hit on something, a couple things that were just, it's something that we always live by, but A, the partnership, and B, also just being that transparent, because like you said, we're all human. We're going to mess up. In this industry, it happens. And most people don't want to know, you messed up. They want to know how you're going to fix it. And I think having that partnership allows that transparent communication. So speaking of communication, what feedback have you received from clients that has helped you evolve your approach to service of communication?
It's so easy to gloss over all the times that we perform well, right? I mean, that's just kind of the expectation, and that's okay. So it's natural to be able to share feedback with us when we fall short, and that's also important. So each month we have quality safety meetings where we talk about the quality and the performance of our product and what our customers are saying about us. And more times than not, we are able to read positive Google reviews and positive feedback, but we also make it a point to also specifically talk about what we call ouch pictures, where we fail to meet our expectations and our customers' expectations. And I really try to balance those meetings because, again, 99% of the time we're shipping out product that is absolutely perfect. But unfortunately, sometimes even internally, we can dwell on those 1% situations where we fall short. And on one hand, maybe we shouldn't even talk about those because we do so many things well. But at the same time, if we're going to strive to get better and improve the client relationship, we do have to address those 1% situations and recognize what we can do better in the future.
I think that can go both ways, like you said, but it's still so great to hear that you're constantly looking at that team and having those conversations up front with them. And I think it just shares the type of company that you are and the fact that you want to constantly strive to get better. So that's great. So speaking of that, can you tell us a time where your team had to go above and beyond in a client relationship? Again, I'm sure there's many stories over the years that you could share with us, but give us one that stands out to you.
Without naming names, I will say this, that we were asked to build signs for another sign company for their personal company, their signs on their building, which is a nice honor, right? And there's a lot of pride that goes into that. And it was a short time frame. We hit the time frame. Unfortunately, we did not do our best with the product, which is a real bummer of an experience, not only for them. You get your own signs that you're so used to putting up signs for other people, and now here they get to put their signs up for their own building, and we fell short there. So we did have to go above and beyond with some remedy type option. And at the same time, our vision as a company is creating a wow experience for our team members, customers, and community. So we did a few things on the side to help ease the pain, so to speak, and go above and beyond. Because like you said, Rhiannon, we all know that we're going to make mistakes, but it's how you address those mistakes and in those moments and how fast you respond. And it's those moments that customers will remember, not necessarily the mistake itself, but like how you responded to the actual problem.
What a unique experience, making the signs for another sign company for their actual building. You don't hear of that very often. So that's a lot of pressure. I'm not going to lie. That's a lot of pressure. But good job. And thank you for sharing that with us.
All right, y'all. So the second segment of today's show is just digging into vendor and supplier relationships. And this is obviously where North American Signs and ESCO meet. But we all know there's that old saying that a chain is really only as strong as its weakest link. Same is true for teams. And for us here at North American Signs, vendors are a part of our team and we need them to be partners that we can trust. That's why we work with people like ESCO. So Stuart, from your perspective, what qualities do y'all look for in vendors when it comes to trust and reliability?
Sure. Well, very similar to us, right? I mean, we're looking for an honest partner. We're looking for someone that's going to be able to perform consistently and someone that listens to our feedback. So if we need product delivered on Tuesdays and Thursdays, or heck, maybe we even need it 3 days a week or 4 days a week. Are they going to respond and help us out? I think a little bit of that also comes down to strategy of how many vendors do you work with? Like, how many eggs do you have in one basket, so to speak, or do you diversify with having all kinds of vendors? And there's pros and cons to each approach, because on one hand, if you're kind of all in on a couple, you're going to be, I guess, more important, I guess you could say, to some of those vendors, because you spend more dollars with those vendors. And they might respond a little bit quicker or have better customer service for ESCO. But conversely, the con side to that is if you are all in on just a couple of vendors, if they fail, then all of a sudden we've got a big problem and we're going to have to branch out. So that has been kind of an interesting learning for me as an owner. And I feel very grateful that we are blessed with many strong vendors that we can rely on and try our best to spread the dollars around as much as possible and be smart about it.
Yeah, absolutely. I appreciate that. What do you guys do when a vendor misses the mark? Cause like we said earlier, nobody's perfect. It happens sometimes. So how do y'all handle that? And
yeah,
preserve
the
relationship?
I mean, you kind of have to look at that piggy bank again, right? I mean, how many deposits have they been making through the years to earn some credibility or some grace? Granted, anytime our vendors fail to perform for us, we're likely going to miss the mark for North American or other companies. And it's just a trickle-down effect, right? And there are times when that happens. And always looking for alternative options, alternative solutions. Can our vendor ship from a different location, a different branch, even if it means paying a little bit more in freight? Just to help expedite and eliminate the problem as quickly as possible.
Yeah, that's like you said, diversifying is a kind of a tough balancing act, but sounds like y'all have struck that in just the right way. And I suppose it's different for every business, and you just got to find what works for you, what works for your team, and what works for your clients primarily.
There's a little bit of, you have to also kind of plan for worst case scenario. Okay, what if this vendor that we've been relying on for years and years, what if they don't make it? What if they go away? Where would we go for product if that vendor was not around? And having a plan B for each item that we're relying very heavily on.
Yeah, it's all about strategy and relying on relationships, but recognizing that you got to have that fallback too. Cool. Yeah. So I want to touch on technology because it's an important part of kind of efficiency in business. What role for y'all does technology or different systems play in helping you be more transparent with your vendors or with your clients, to circle back to that?
I think, you know, a good use of technology for us in particular is with a couple of our larger clients. We don't necessarily use technology a whole lot with our vendors, but with some of our larger clients that we have shared spreadsheets, whether it's through SharePoint or a Google Doc, and we're listing out all the projects with their expected ship dates or any anticipated issues that are arising, or if we're missing paint colors, that type of thing. I mean, that might seem kind of basic and obvious, but it has actually helped streamline communication pretty effectively. So rather than having a bunch of emails going back and forth, you've got a live document that everybody's basically just working off of. In addition to that, I'm also really excited about what AI has to offer. We are just scratching the surface. And I really feel strongly that each company out there really needs an AI champion to take the reins and figure out what is possible for our particular business. And so I've got someone here internally that is leading that charge, and we're investing some more dollars and resources into what that looks like. And how can we streamline some of our workflows internally? It's not about eliminating people. It's not about eliminating jobs or anything like that, but how can we be most efficient with the limited number of human resources that we have and stretch our abilities as much as we possibly can by just simply utilizing technology through the AI systems.
Absolutely. We've talked about that on this podcast before, just that you have to get on the AI train like now. You or at least you need to start looking into it yesterday, right? Because if you don't, then everybody else is going to be on top of it and be using it. And you're going to be the one left in the dust wondering why everyone else is nailing these huge clients that you want, but you can't have because you don't have the capacity because you haven't harnessed the technology.
It's pretty incredible.
Having that AI champion within your team is also super smart. And that's a really good insight because obviously we're still moving. We're still grooving. To have somebody that is specifically geared to looking at that and how that can affect our specific industry day in and day out, I think that's great. And because as we know, AI is such a wide range tool that we don't exactly know what capacity we're going to use it in yet. So having somebody try to figure out what those strengths and weaknesses are in that specific capacity is great.
Yeah,
and I think maybe a lot of people should join in on that, having somebody specifically looking in on that and championing that project.
Here's a quick little story and a fun tip on the AI side. I had my administrative assistant go through and upload all of the former resumes that we had for the administrative assistant role into AI. And we uploaded the job description and we said, all right, please take these six applicants that applied for the administrative assistant role and rank them 1 through 6 on who would be most likely to succeed. And sure enough, she was number one on that list.
Oh my goodness. That is cool.
Yeah. So that was kind of a neat deal. I mean, she'd already worked for the company for a year, but just to be able to go back and take all those applications, upload them, see that she ranked number one. So I was in tune with AI and I didn't even know it.
There you go.
Or better yet, maybe AI was in tune with you.
There we go.
Yeah.
So, Stuart, I'm really excited to talk to you about this topic today, which is internal culture. And we know that internal culture always leads to external success. And leadership is something that is so important to me and something that I'm always striving to improve upon. So what is your philosophy on leadership and how does it contribute to the culture of your team?
Yes, this is a really good topic. It's something that I'm personally reflecting on basically daily. So I've been with the company for 11 years coming up on Monday, July 28th. I've owned the company for about 5.5 years. And I've definitely had my fair share of learning lessons. I just learning how to be a leader and how to run a business. And one of the things that I try to remind myself of with our senior leadership team is that everyone on this team has been hired for a reason. Okay. They have certain skills. They have certain abilities that were the right fit for their role, right? And I need to do a very good job and a better job of allowing them to flourish, setting clear expectations and letting them own their role. And one of the questions that has helped me with that through the years, and I feel like I'm getting better and better by the year with this, is what's the worst that could happen? If they take this project, if they take on this customer, if they take on this responsibility, what's the worst that could happen? And if that answer is not going to tank the business or not going to derail us too far, then let them run with it. And again, me being a perfectionist, and admittedly, that's a fault of mine, there are more ways to get from point A to point B. It doesn't just have to be my way. It could be somebody else's way that could be even better. So allowing our team to just simply do their job has developed some trust within our leadership team.
And I think allowing people to take that ownership and that responsibility just gives them such a more sense of buy-in to the company as a whole, because it is on their shoulders. It is on and having that sense of trust where your team feels like you trust them is so huge. And I think one of the other things that we discuss often is everybody coming in on skill sets with different skill sets. And as a leader, and I don't know how you feel about this, but as a leader, I've had to look at and almost adjust different job opportunities for people's skill sets and as they develop through the position and trying to find the best fits for everybody. And I think as a leader, we need to adjust to our team as well and their skill sets. So, but we know that even the highest functioning teams, that there's sometimes conflict And that's always the fun part as a leader, as a manager, right? But how do you handle the internal conflict, and in what way does that even further add to the trust?
Yeah, thank you. That's a good question. Fortunately, and I can say this with all honesty, like I don't have to deal with a lot of internal conflict, at least not that I'm seeing anyway. Certainly there is conflict when it comes to just being passionate about fulfilling our vision statement of creating that wow experience for our customer, where maybe sales feels like our production team is missing the mark on a ship date, or production feels like sales isn't giving us all the information or getting all the information to them in a timely and efficient manner for them to be successful. So those are probably the most common types of frustration or internal conflict that we deal with. Don't have a lot of time for drama. Don't really, don't have a lot of time for it. So just being honest from my perspective, being clear about what my expectations are, has probably helped us foster that culture. And back to the other question, as far as just developing trust within the team and me making the comment of letting them do their job, probably like the hardest part for me on that, as I, again, I reflect, is I'm so passionate, I'm so driven, that I'm competitive, that I want to be just super successful with the company. I didn't buy it to plateau it. I bought it to continue to elevate it, to give my four children an opportunity to run the business someday. And part of the issue with that is that I can tend to get into the weeds more often in time than I should. And I'm getting better at that, but I'm also recognizing and cognizant that that's an area that I fall short, that can help develop trust by simply allowing them to do their job. And again, asking myself that question, what's the worst that could happen?
As a top leader, sometimes delegating is one of the hardest things to do, because you are developing the person along with allowing that trust from you. So trusting, it goes both ways. As a leader, you need to allow them to trust you, and they need to be able to, and you need to be able to trust them. So delegating is definitely hard, and something that I've worked on throughout the years as well.
Stuart, let me just ask this question. What would you recommend to people who recognize they're like, I see that I need to like let go a little bit and let my people do their thing? What would you say to them to encourage them to do that? Or how do you take that first step to allowing your team to make mistakes or to succeed?
For me, what has helped is this book called Buy Back Your Time. And the concept there that ties to your question is, okay, if I'm able to let our team do their job, what are the tasks can I then focus my time on? And I'm just going to use maybe a poor analogy, but if I'm allowing my team to work on $50 an hour tasks and projects, what kind of $100 or $150 an hour tasks can I personally work on to help move the company forward from an overall strategic perspective? So looking at it from that perspective, like delegating and letting go, if you're able to delegate effectively and let go some of those projects to your team, what can then you do as the leader of the company, because you've got this extra time to go and devote towards these big overarching goals or areas for growth that no one else has the knowledge, the skill set, or ability to do as the person writing the checks, as the owner, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I appreciate that. How do you literally break it down to how do you value the time itself? Is it worth $50? Is it worth $100? Is it worth $200? And being able to delegate some of those tasks that maybe have a lower dollar value, and reserving the more intense tasks for yourself. That's a super helpful way to break it down.
And that employee is successful with that task, what's the trickle down effect there too? Giving them more, I guess, confidence to continue on in their role. And so that's another thing, is how do you model that trustworthiness in your day to day? And for somebody that does really good when you delegate those tasks, how do you handle that person? How do you handle that feedback for them?
Each time they're able to complete some of those tasks, it just shows them what they're capable of. opens up the door for more opportunities to delegate and growth opportunities for them. They're going to be engaged because they've got a proven track record of showing that they can perform for some of these sensitive tasks that need to get done. And as a result, they're going to have a growth through the company of more responsibility because they're able to take on these more unique type situations or projects. It's actually been very beneficial for our company. Like over the last year, over the last really 2 years, we've hired on some new roles within our company that we previously hadn't had, such as a marketing department itself, administrative assistant, and then just most recently, director of operations. Three new roles, but these new roles have helped propel our company forward for sure. Absolutely has cost the company more in terms of payroll, but the value that we're getting from these high-level individuals and allowing them to do their job in the areas of specialty that previously were being done by either me or others just to the best of our ability, but not all in. Those have been some real game-changing moves for our company.
That testament to investing in your team, it sounds like.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure.
That is awesome. Stuart, any final words of wisdom for us, for the listeners? Anything that we didn't touch on?
No, I just thank you very much for having me. I really appreciate it. And I appreciate the kind words about ESCO. We're very grateful for North American Signs. Just recently had Scott out here to visit in Watertown, South Dakota. It was great to have him. Heck of a nice guy, as you know. And North American is lucky to have him along with you kind folks. So thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for being on, and thanks for sharing your insights. This has been a really insightful conversation. We're going to be excited to share it with the audience. All right, Rhiannon, this was a great episode full of tons of insights. It's going to be hard to pick, but what's your top takeaway?
You are right on that, Tori. He had so many great things to say. To just pick one, I think, because I'm so passionate about leadership and growth in that area. Just talking to Stuart about just delegating to employees and how he said that when you look at it in regards to your own time as a leader, and when you do delegate to others, it is great for them and is that great trust building for them. It's that confidence builder for them. But what does that open you up to do and that you can accomplish that you might not be able to do before? So that was the biggest one for me.
Yeah. Oh, I totally agree. That was some helpful kind of just the book recommendation, which I don't remember exactly what the title was, but just that idea of how do you value your own time and how are you going to delegate in a way that doesn't just work for you, but works for your team and helps them grow into the amazing associates that you know that they can be. I love that. I think for me, the key takeaway was the AI champion. I know, Rhiannon, you had kind of responded to that earlier, but I just think that is great. It's a great idea. It's a great term. Someone who has the kind of innate passion or desire to learn more about AI, someone who really cares about your company, who can hold those things together and say, how do we make it work? How do we utilize the technology that is out there to best serve our team, to augment what they do, to best serve our clients, grow the business, right? There's just so much that AI can do for you. And I said it earlier, I'm going to say it again, y'all, get on the AI train. You got to figure out how to use it in at least some small ways, right? Because what works today probably is not going to be what's effective for you guys next week or, you know, whatever, because of the pace of change. But
how cool is that story they used that administration assistant, they put all the resumes in and asked AI which would be the best candidate. And even though she had been working there for a year, AI came out with her resume. So how cool is that? You know, there's so many things that, again, I don't even think about that AI can be used for. And it's just so, I wouldn't have thought about that. That's really neat. And that's really cool. And having that AI champion where the day-to-day keeps rolling. We're moving. We're busy. Mm-hmm. Everything is crazy all the time. So having that person that has that AI in their pocket and is really, truly focusing on that, I think that's huge. I think that's a really good idea. I think it's honestly something that we might utilize in the future.
Yeah, seriously. I mean, and I think too, this kind of just popped into my mind, but it's great for employees across all kind of levels of a business, or just like in your own practice as you're developing as a professional, get into the habit of using AI on a somewhat regular basis, right? Because the people that are moving and shaking in your industry are already doing that. Even something as simple as, I know my go-to when I need to find information is to Google it, right? That's what I've been doing for my whole life. But transitioning a little bit into, well, let me ask AI instead. And it doesn't mean that you just like automatically trust ChatGPT or whatever it is, but getting into that habit of turning to the AI system instead of trying to do all the work yourself is just going to make you a lot faster. And something I'm working on. My fiance is amazing at this. Anytime there's a question in conversation about literally anything, he's like, well, let's just ChatGPT it, right? Mm-hmm. ChatGPT is the new Google. It's going to be a slang term. But just building that into your own workflow so that when the time comes for your workflow to shift even more heavily into an AI supported kind of process, you'll be ready for it.
All right, everyone, that is a wrap. And thank you so much, Stuart, for taking your time out of your busy schedule to join us today. You had so many great insights, and it's just really nice to connect with another partner in the cyan industry.
Absolutely. Y'all, thanks for joining us today. Don't forget to like and share this episode, subscribe to the podcast, and let us know what other key factors you think are important to building trust across internal and external teams. Until next time, keep innovating.